Welcome back to another evening with Felix Ruiz and Daniel Gayton in Whiskey Conversations.
So, the topic that I want to talk about right now is about the masks people wear. Okay. Why and how do you see that right now in today's society? How are people hiding who they really are and expressing versions of themselves that might not be accurate to fit in? And that's pretty much it. So just let me start you with that. Those kind of concepts. What are your initial reactions? We did not pre-plan this. Said one take. And you didn't get to know the question ahead of time.
I mean, the main thing that comes to mind right away is, at what point do you really know that you're being who you are? Or at what point do you identify with that? And I mean, I imagine it's a process for anybody who ventures down and tries to figure out who they are as a person.
See, because that goes back to in the heroic book, or was it the demotivator book? I forgot which book we wrote it in, but it's like, because you're you, part of who you are is you, part of who you are is your past, part of who you are is who you're trying to be, and all of that kind of falls into who you are, but then also part of who you are is like how you interact with people, right? So it's like, that would also encompass those you interact with, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like part of who you are might include your family and your friends and even acquaintances.
Mm-hmm.
And then your image, how everybody else who doesn't interact with you regularly just sees you. Maybe it's on social media or just what they think
just
of you.
Crossing somebody on the street.
All of that kind of together kind of is a broad realistic way to define who you are, right?
Well, and I taking into consideration all of that, you can only really determine who you are by the quality of the results that you produce, right? So say you are, if who you believe you are, who you say you are, is simply producing fear or insecurity or any of those emotions that we would deem negative, would you accept that that's who somebody is meant to be?
So like, if you mention the word results, to me, what I hear is like, what comes to mind for me is the other side of that, which is results. To hit a result, you need a goal. And, right? That means you need, and then you need an ending point in time that you would call a result, right? And then you would need, like a teacher grading a test kind of entity, whether it's another person or yourself, you know?
But even if there isn't...
To judge that result.
Even if there isn't an overseeing figure that's determining whether or not your results are appropriate, isn't there still a result nonetheless?
So
if a tree gets cut down in the forest but nobody's around to hear it, does it make a sound? Like... Even if nobody's there to witness the result, isn't there still a result?
Yes.
That new lesson that I told you about, I defeated.
So with the tree example, that's a result. But what we're talking about right now, though, that's like a metaphorical situation that happens. But like what we're talking about now, though, is like, because people are very caught up in identity politics right now. They're trying to make stances of who they are. They're trying to judge other people for being who they are. Mm-hmm. And then they're trying to rank order value based on race and age and sex. And, you know, like the it's literally a new insult to call an old white lady Karen. Like, this is new.
Somebody called me a Karen.
Really?
Yeah.
What did you do?
It was very...
How did that happen?
It's fucking...
I can't
remember what context it was under, but it was during one of these, you know, race topics that we were discussing, and it almost felt like a cop out because it reached the point where I was making what I felt were valid points, and then they just resorted to calling me a Karen.
See, so like,
and it's like, if it did feel, it stung, man. Like, I was like, what the hell? Calling me a Karen.
Yeah, because I think once you run out of arguments, but you still don't want to accept the other side's point, almost what you have to do is label them as a thing that's not worth contending with. See, or that's despicable, like a Hitler or a Karen. Do you
know what I'm saying? So let's say, what would be the use of a mask? Say somebody is who they are, but at some point they put on a mask to hide who they truly are. You know,
we do this all the time. Like at work, you're not really like interacting with your coworkers. If somebody pisses you off and then you just kind of laugh it off and let it go, and then you come home and then your wife has to deal with it, mm-hmm. or, you know what I mean? Or your kids have to deal with the anger because it's still baking in your head.
So the mask, so like in that situation, the mask will be removed once you get home.
There's masks everywhere, right? And it's like some people wear them even at home though, you know? Some people wear them at home, at work. Like I think it depends on the context of interaction. So if you're interacting at work, that's a mask. If you're interacting with a group of friends, I might argue that's probably the most likely spot for you to just release and not have that filter. And filter is probably the best definition I have to describe what a mask is.
It's like ironic because when you were saying that, I actually felt that when you're around friends would be the time that you would more likely
to wear one,
to wear a mask.
Why?
Mostly because I see it as, you know, those social interactions kind of just lead to, you know, is it really time to bring that up, or is it really time to put my position in? Let me go ahead and just kind of nod and move on. That might be my own personal method.
Have you ever done that?
Hell yeah, I do that all the time. Yeah. I think about whether or not, like, is this the time to bring this up? And it's like, nah, it's not worth it. Like, let me just kind
of... See, but that level of analysis, do you feel like that's happening all the time?
No, definitely not.
Definitely. Why, though? Do you think it's like a values thing, or like where people are coming from, how they're raised?
Mostly, well, I mean, at least from my perspective, when I do that, when I say put on a mask simply to, because I don't want to get into a heated debate or a heavy conversation about a certain issue, is like, I think it through. I'm like, you know what? I really just don't feel like going into that right now. Like, is it really going to be a moment where things are going to change, and we're going to change each other's minds. Like, it almost feels like I have to be ready for that situation.
Isn't that a little bit of projecting a non-certain outcome onto a situation before it happens?
Oh, definitely.
100%. Wouldn't you say that's wrong?
No, I wouldn't say it's wrong. I would say it's something that happens, but I wouldn't
it's
say
probably
it's
probably not wrong.
That's wrong.
It's like most of the time, right? Like, I mean, like, projecting a negative outcome if you're going to literally run your car into a wall is different.
Well, let's ask
than
that.
Than a social interaction.
Is it wrong to wear a mask? Like if we really want to get down to
it. But I think, like, see, so part of it, I was watching, just today, I was watching John Taffer, the bar rescue guy, talk to Dave Rubin. Dave Rubin's interviewing a bunch of, like, business owners to kind of try to get advice on how to navigate through the pandemic. Mm. And anyways, like John Taffer was saying, like, if there's a bunch of, if a specific bar plays only country music, then the hip hop guys aren't going to ever go there. Or like, if there's dozens of motorcycles in front of the bar, people have a certain image and won't go there if they're not into that. And like, it's the same thing with the mask. Cause it's like, if you're in public and you have a mask, then from their perspective, it's like, we have our science on how this saves lives, and then they project onto you that that's the right way to live their life. But then it's like,
Max,
the non-mask people, they have their science and experts, and they have the same thing. They're like, well, you're encroaching on my freedoms, and we have data to show the masks don't help. And it's like, then it's like they're putting each other's experts up against each other, right?
Where's the mask? Where's the metaphorical
mask? And that's
mask
what I mean. Like, so like, I think that underneath these real masks is metaphorical masks. And it's based on what we talked about the other day, where it's like, you get into this domain where you feel like you're being informed correctly as opposed to those who are not being informed correctly. And it's largely based on social media, like, and news channels, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if I watch Channel 5 videos for longer than a minute over and over and over, Facebook is going to show me more of Channel 5 over and over and over because the algorithm thinks I like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it thinks that even more if I end up liking it or sharing it or commenting on it, right? It's like the algorithms are set up to put walls between you and the other side, mm-hmm, of the viewpoint, right? And it's like the masks, part of the physical masks say something about somebody's character, where it's like how they want to be seen in public, regardless, like, put aside the actual potential or not potential, like, physical health risks, right? Some people just want to look like a good person, right?
You know, it's funny that you bring that up, because I was thinking about that, about how on social media it's so prominent right now to hear political views. So many different people have their opinion and so many things, but even myself, I've tried to get into the conversation. But on the other end, when I'm out in public, I almost want to be as invisible as possible.
But you know what?
I don't want to be noticed at all.
That's probably one of the benefits of social media, because in order for somebody to become a follower of you, for example, like, they have to choose to have you be part of their domain bubble,
mm-hmm,
for lack of a better term, right? And that's more comfortable because it's almost like they're accepting you on some level to even speak into their ears your opinion.
Well, and
versus in public, you don't have that.
See,
you know,
what
you
if,
don't know who you're with.
What if in regards to the masks that we're wearing, it actually has a big deal to do with that presence that we have on social media, that we're more in control of, as opposed to not being as in control of when we're out in the real world?
I think we're less in control of our social media newsfeed than we would like to think we are.
I mean, does it go into the whole results thing? That are you really not aware of the results that you're producing?
I don't think most people realize that there's an algorithm that shows you more of what you want to see.
No, I think people have gone on to, because people talk about it. They say, you know, oh, I was talking about this product.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. And now it shows up in my news.
It shows up, right,
see, but
yeah.
That conversation kind of airs in the conspiracy theory thing when they're saying it, because they're like, I swear my phone is watching me. I swear somebody's looking at me through my camera. But all it is the algorithms of the platform.
And I mean, it makes sense. Like, if you read the privacy policies, you know, it tells you we're going to use.
Have you actually read the privacy policies?
Not all the way through. Enough to the point
if you just have read a sentence, you've read more than I've read.
Well, because they even tell you, you know, we're going to use, you know, the information that we build up through here for ads that may be relatable,
right,
to your searches and things like that. So they tell you right up front. And I mean,
sorry, so we paused it and came back because we were interrupted. But at the end of the day, what we're talking about is that Facebook watches you in ways that you're not aware of all the time. And so does every social media platform. And part of that, what it can turn into is like a loop that turns into like a coil looking spiral where it can go up or down. And if you start spiraling towards negative news and violence and riots and all that, you're going to end up all you're going to see is the most extreme things going on in any given spot of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then therefore it's only rational for you to really, and it's understandable for you to make decisions on what's right and wrong and how you should act based on that window you have, because that's the right word. I like that. That's your window into the world. We wouldn't know what the fuck's going on in China if it wasn't for social media and the news outlets, right? And it is, in a way, what I'm saying is you create your own window that causes you. You create your own window into the world based on your social media interaction and the news and what's out there anyways. And then you do it, your friends do it, your mom does it, your cousins do it, and you all share stuff with each other. And you end up in an ethos, in a domain, in like a bubble that's different from somebody else's bubble. But then because you're in that bubble, you feel like you should, and correctly so, I think, act upon what you see in that bubble. And it seems like that's what a good person would do, is use the information available to them to make life, to make choices and act out, you know, different actions in their life to try to do what they think is right. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a mask. And the ones that are the most loud about it are like, here is my mask. And they're like, here's my view on the world.
That's actually what I wanted to point out, because obviously there's those people that will go to extreme measures to go ahead and make sure that their ideological views are like put on the game board. And here's the thing, is that them having a mask, or is that them being able to get behind a bigger mask and be themselves within that movement? Because I think all these people that take advantage of the situations that have been going on and are taking care of their own agenda, while, you know, you have these people who are actually fighting against something that they believe in, as opposed to other people that are just saying, you know what, I fall under this demographic, let me go ahead and take advantage of this.
So then my question, what comes to mind is like, what percentage of people do you think are seeing this as my beliefs that I've been suppressing for a long time, I can now enact, and I now have a group to be a part of? Like, 'cause that's kind of what you're saying, right?
No, because the mentality that I have in mind is one that doesn't have their best intentions in for the movement that they're following. Like, I take into consideration all the, you know, the people that have been murdered under the Black Lives Movement, which don't really seem to correspond with the movement at all. Like, the views don't seem to connect with what's being projected.
See, and like, that's my concern.
What is that?
That's my concern, is the outliers who don't do their research, who don't know what they're really joining, but they just want a release. And then they release in a different way than those who have done the research and are doing things for a cause.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the same thing, like what Black Lives Matter is doing to cops is painting all cops into this negative light.
Mm-hmm.
The way... And
on the other end, yeah, we have all of conservatives projecting this like chaotic and like savage mindset that's in the liberal side that isn't true to every single one. Like, on each side, I feel like you're getting only the media projecting on the outliers, like you said.
Yeah, and again, people part of any movement, whether it's the Black Lives Matter movement or even part of the police force or part of the news or anybody, it's like, are they doing it because it's what they believe, or are they doing it because just to do it, just to do a thing, just to be a part of a thing,
That's what I was telling you, is that it feels, you know, it's, I will admit that even though, well, the fact that I lean more to the conservative side, I'll say my weakness is the fact that it takes too many reminders for me to realize that there's an issue in the community, that it's something that we need to be involved in. And it wasn't until Chrissy, who she's going to be on another one of these podcasts, said that her boss pointed out to her that he's going to be really upset if after the election, people aren't going to be talking about this anymore.
Her boss said that?
Yeah. As in,
are you serious? As in,
because he feels that all of this is being fueled because of the election year. And that afterwards...
Well, that adds on, because then that's like it's a really layered cake that honestly we probably don't even know how many layers it's got.
Right.
And, we know the trigger. The trigger was Corona. Right? Because at the end of the day, think about it, at the end of this month, the $600 a month unemployment is going to end, right? And it's like, then millions more people are going to be without income. And, I mean, from one side, you could say it's because they didn't take the time to find a job and do the right thing and blah, blah, right? But it's like, where's the education to do stuff like that? You know what I mean? Who's, like, my little sister is getting this, and she's not, she thinks that this $600 is great and it's amazing and she's living in the now, but what I can't get her to do is widen her time frame of thought to think after the $600 a month. And I know that if it's, if my sister's getting this and I'm literally trying to talk her out of this regularly, mm-hmm. probably a lot of other people are thinking that way, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, what happens when you put financial stress on people? That's legit, you know? Like, if you literally couldn't pay the bills or feed your kids, I mean, it seems rational to act out. It's like, that's what you would want to do, right? And that's what the government should be doing, is helping people through this virus, right?
And it's ironic that you say that, because as you say that, that financial stress, you know, will push people to that extent. The only thing I think of with my viewpoint is that mindset will push you to the point of figuring out how to get out of it. Like, it was funny, because at the very beginning of this, before the supplement was even discussed, in my mind it was, what am I going to do? Like, am I going to have to sell my house? Am I going to have to sell my car? Like, I was thinking of the options, and I was thinking of them in order of what I would have to get rid of first in order to maintain our quality of life, you know? And it never occurred to me that the government was going to give me a handout. And it's ironic, because even if I do fall more on the conservative side of a viewpoint and I take that supplement, it seems counterintuitive. I don't feel like I'm really a good conservative, but at the same time, if they didn't, I wouldn't be upset with them. I wouldn't be upset with our government saying, we can't bail you guys out. Like we just can't.
Right. So then, going back to the masks and identity politics thing, right? So then this goes into, everybody has a different way, a lens through which they view the world naturally, fueled by their, or tinted rather, by their domain that they trap themselves in through their social media interaction and viewing history, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, what I thought about when you first said that was, it's, if you take somebody in their day-to-day life, minus the social media, don't worry about the media bubble, but if you take them and you monitor their daily behaviors and what they do on a day-to-day basis, let's say for 3 months, and then you compile that together, you can get a pretty good sense of who that person is. And even, it doesn't matter what they say they are, because you see what they do on a day-to-day basis. And
that's Jordan. This is a side note. That's Jordan Peterson's definition of belief, by the way, because to him, your actions represent your beliefs, more so than what you say your beliefs are. That's why he says God exists.
That which you say or you're projecting, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's who you are. At the end of the day,
exactly.
That which you are is what you do every single day.
Right. Well, that's part of who you are, right? Like I said, yeah. At the beginning.
And see, I don't want to get too caught up on the, because we can go pretty deep into who you are as a person, but,
well, at the end of the day, you're just atoms and you don't matter.
Well,
that's where that ends, you know?
Well, I was going to go more into like the spiritual aspect of,
that's what I mean. That's kind of, that's
and,
the opposite.
And then that's what you reach at some point, but it's interesting that no matter what, your social media is going to reflect that. It's almost like it's your social media
right.
becomes a second, almost a way to view your personality, almost a way of seeing like, what have you been doing so repeatedly that the algorithm has now picked up on it and said, you know what? I'm almost positive you're going to love this, this, and this. I do this with my music. The music that I listen to, I almost always go in there and they say, you know what? We've been listening to what you've been listening to and you're going to like this, this, and this. I listen to it and I love it. And it comes to a surprise to me, but what if the algorithm really isn't that complex? What if it really is a matter of...
It's just a matter of awareness at that point then, because like I certainly wasn't aware of really how a domain of social media posts and views and videos and what it shows you and what you see, I've only become aware of this within the last year, you know? And I've actually been running ads myself for 5 to 10 years, you know? And so the whole point is, I think then awareness is a big problem, but... Is that a firework outside?
It was.
Nice.
People anyway, are still...
Yeah. Still going off. That's me. That's my brother in it. Anyway, the algorithm, again, so I've been paying for ads for a while now myself, but I didn't really realize that what when I'm targeting somebody through an advertisement, I can target their age range. I can target the country they live in. I can even target the zip code somebody lives in. I can target their interests. And who knows how the hell Facebook figures out your interests, right? It's like based on your likes. You know what I mean? Like, what does that even mean? But it's like I can target people who read or people who like certain fan pages or people who like certain public figures. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so advertisers are reaching out to people in specific and very – they're it's almost cliche. You find your niche. You find – that's the word they use, niche. You find your the smallest group of people and that's your customer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And anyways, the way that person ends up there though to buy a – pair of pliers, for example, is, first of all, they search. They're a customer of pliers. They're a customer tools. Of a hardware store.
Yeah.
They're a customer of, maybe they like, where's the hardware? But they like Home Depot or Lowe's, right? Maybe they just like that fan page or whatever, right? Then Facebook sees that and shows them stuff that they might be interested in. And I, as an advertiser, might target people who like Lowe's or Home Depot or mm-hmm. whatever your hardware stores. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you end up in these ethoses based on kind of what you really like. So in some sense, it is kind of a mirror to you.
Yeah.
But
how do you, as a person, I mean, it almost seems as though it would, it's actually almost a tangible way for you to see your change as a person. Like the history that your social media shows over the span of a year to 6 months actually shows
I like that.
Who you are.
Yeah, I like that.
You know? And it's a shame because it is like you said, it's easy for you to get coiled up in it and end up
And that's what I mean. Like, if you just imagine an actual coil, right, like a spring, it has two directions. Let's say you start in the middle. You can spiral down or spiral up. But, like, I mean, up and down is arbitrary based on what you think is good and wrong, right?
Right.
But anyways, you end up in a place where you see the news posts that Facebook thinks you'd like to see.
Yeah.
And... you know, and again, this is true. I keep saying Facebook, but it's true of Instagram and every social media place. You know, Twitter, like, they're completely different owners, similar algorithms, you know, Google, whatever. But, like, you can spiral yourself. And what I mean by spiral up or down, you can spiral yourself into a point where you don't even see the best versions of the opposition's argument. Because that's kind of my beef with it. It's like
I do feel that it's saturated in the radicalist point of view on both fronts. Right. It's either
and that's
it's
not
either
the best
you're
version
a,
of
you're
your
a
argument.
Supreme Trump supporter
yeah.
or you're this radical freaking Black Lives Matter,
right.
you know, advocate that's, you know, looting and rioting. And
right.
it's like there's no middle ground. There's nobody
right.
representing the middle where it's like, you know what, I just tend to lean a little bit more on either side, but nobody cares about that viewpoint because it doesn't make news.
And that's the value of these kind of conversations. It's like you bring forth your best versions of an argument throughout a long conversation that you wouldn't get to hear in a soundbite from a news station. You know, you wouldn't get to hear a kind of the quality of debate you'd get from a conversation. And I think debate has a negative view on it because it sounds like oppositions, right? That's why I think conversation is the mechanism that can get us out of this. But it's like with the right people who have good versions of the argument, not just the most radical, like me versus you. And it's like whoever wins in a fight is the winner. It's like, no,
mm-hmm.
no, no. We need to form policies. We need to have what we can all agree on is a quote-unquote good path forward for the most number of people is, like, the way to do that is conversation followed by policy based on agreement, or let's say majority, let's go with the democratic process, the majority agreement on a specific version of the policy, you know? And it's like, then we try it out, have more conversations, try it out again, have more, and we just hone it that way, right? It astounds me that it sounds so simple when I say it.
Yeah.
But, like, here we are. There's people smarter than all of us, apparently, right, that are supposed to be in charge of this kind of shit. But they can't simplify things like that.
Yeah.
And that kind of concerns me. And to your point where you want to join the conversation on these kind of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to, I mean, that's kind of your challenge, is like, bring forth a non-simplistic, non-emotion-driven version of the argument that can connect to emotional people and intellectuals at the same time, because you make good points and you're passionate about those points.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of...
And I appreciate the fact that when I do go out and I engage in people and they engage back and give me, you know, very well-written paragraphs of what they think, it feels nice. But then,
have you ever written one of those paragraphs, by the way?
I've been doing it, man. Like, that's
what you've been responding to.
Hell yeah, I've been responding to it. But the thing is, also, I'll go through different areas, and I'll find people just going back and forth. And it is like you said, they want to win. Yeah. They want to be the one with the last word, with the fight. Like,
well,
it doesn't seem constructive, because
to bring the podcasters up to speed, what we're talking about is where we had a conversation off the air that I talked about how there's different ways to have a conversation. One is where you're trying to point score and trying to beat the other person and make them accept your views. And then to that point, you're arguing for your views, and literally you might get mad, and, you know, or there's the collaborative version of an argument or a conversation in which you're trying to get to some place that you both don't know where it is, but you're trying to understand the other side's position and maybe make your side better, or find a middle ground on both, or maybe be willing to change your mind. It's like, that's healthy conversation.
You know, being a manager, and I've been asked this a lot in interviews, so I'm sure you've asked this question at least. Is he licking out of there?
All right, podcasters, his dog is licking water from the water dispenser, so that's what we're looking at.
Well, it's a good thing.
Okay, so being a manager...
Being a manager, I'm sure you've asked.
Sorry, this question, guys. Again, this podcast is over a glass of whiskey, and yeah, so you'll have to bear with
us. Jim Beam, not a plug.
Not a plug.
Jim Beam Black, extra aged, 8 years approximately.
Okay, so being a manager.
Being a manager, I've been asked this before in probably every interview I've had, and that's, what are your greatest weaknesses? And
you know, that's one of my favorite questions, because that's one of the ways I actually describe this when I'm training general managers or whatever level of management that might do interviews to hire somebody. I literally teach them that the interviewee is wearing a mask, and your goal is to ask them questions and then try to look for cracks in the mask. And then, because there's laws around questions we can't ask, right? You have to ask questions that are legal and that help get that mask off. And 100%, the best question to ask to remove a mask is, what are you... And I actually explain the question, because I just started saying, what are your weaknesses? Well, and the way I pretext it is I start off, what's your biggest strength? What do you see as your biggest strength as a character? And
I feel like you ask that question, the opposite is the answer to that follow-up question.
You might be right. You might be right. Because, again, the whole point is not the answer to the question. The point is how you answer it.
Right.
And so when I asked, what's your biggest strength? They're like, well, my work ethic. I'm willing to work 24/7. I legit have worked 24/7 these last 7 years. I actually like doing that. That's a big strength of mine. I'm a really hard worker. So then the way I say it, this is me actually in an interview. I'll say, all right, then I'll flip the coin on that. What's a weakness that you have currently that you're trying to overcome, and how are you trying to overcome that? And then I'll say, the reason I asked that question is because I want to see a growth mindset. I want to see how you're trying to better yourself. And so, again, what's the weakness you're working on right now? And it's like, you would not believe the number of people who just straight say, I don't have any weaknesses. It's like immediately, nope, you're not trying to better yourself, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, if you're not trying to better yourself, how can I better you? It's not my job.
That means
you're not trying to better yourself. You're trying to wait for other people to benefit you, or some kind of external, you know what I mean? I'm looking for, that's the point of the weakness question, you know? So, your question again?
Well, it's...
Sorry. I got off on that because I actually do.
And I found a significance to that question because eventually I realized that whether you answer about your strength or your weaknesses, they can be inverted.
Yeah.
It's the quality of yourself that sets you, takes you apart from the crowd. But that also brings its own risks with it. Like, for example, I could say that, yeah, I'm definitely a hard worker, and I go ahead and I make sure to excel to the highest that I can. But on the flip side of that, I'm extremely hard on myself. I do not take failure well. That when I do fail at something, I will make myself feel bad about it to the point where I make sure that it does not happen again.
Hey.
So it's self-defeating, but it's how much is it a responsibility to the individual to identify the strengths and weaknesses within themselves?
Well, what I look for, me personally, again, I hire people for a living and I train them and I actually make sure they can be profitable for a business, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when I ask the strength question, one thing I'll say, first thing that came to mind is that literally nobody has ever done what you just said they could do. I've literally interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people for jobs.
Do I have the job?
From is this an interview? This whole podcast? Oh, shit. I mean, what position do you want? You want my job?
I do.
I mean, okay. If you're thinking like that,
that's the only way.
Cheers to that. No, but first of all, the point is, first, nobody has ever done what you just said they should do. And second, I've never expected somebody to do what you just said they should do. But third, the best answers are an answer. It doesn't matter how deep they're thinking about themselves. If I see, you know, one person said, like, recently, I'm just trying to work on my customer service skills because I'm kind of awkward with people. I'm a little shy. So I want to get some experience.
That's huge. That's like, honestly, for somebody to come forward with that, I feel I would take that answer over nothing.
And that's what I'm saying. That's the whole point. No weaknesses is a shit answer. That's like,
that's the worst. I'm not hiring you. If there is a worst answer, that is it.
That's actually it. Then, you know, and then again, well.
To all the Gen Zs.
The point is, it doesn't matter what answer they have. The point is, they identify a way they're working on themselves. And to me as a manager, if you have the kind of mind that can work on yourself at literally any level, no matter how sophisticated or non-sophisticated. But first, I mean, your answer was probably sophisticated as fuck, just to complicate you.
But
non-sophisticated, and answer is what I'm looking for. And you know what's funny? I don't come back. Okay, so to get off this weakness thing, when they tell me they're weak, what they're doing to work on themselves or better themselves, right? My then response is, because I know in my head all I want is an answer. Doesn't matter what the fuck it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
my then response is, great, I can see that, and here's how I can, then I go, then I see
you're
it.
You're going to play in that?
Yeah, I see it as, how am I going to help this person achieve that through the job I have for them? And if I can see myself helping them build that, let's take customer service and shyness as an example, because my area of expertise is in the restaurant industry, right? Food,
people.
Right? And therefore people.
Yeah.
That's right. It's all run by people, for people, eaten by people, made by people. You know what I mean? That's it's a very
specific way.
But it's a really human thing, and we're dealing with people eating. That's the area of human experience we're giving.
But take those two answers. Take the person that tells you, hey, you know, I'm actually very socially awkward and it's hard for me to give, you know, good customer service. You have that answer. And then you have the person that tells you, none. I'm fucking straight. I'm good.
Yeah.
And so you as a manager now, say you hire both of these people with person A, you know that, hey man, I might get a call from a customer saying that this person didn't get good customer service, and you actually have something to work off of, like, oh, I anticipated this. But the person that puts up the mask, as we originally were talking about, that says there is none, there is no weakness that you have to worry about, then as the seeds start to sprout, like, oh, you had this problem and this problem, you have a harder time anticipating, okay.
Well, you know, let me interrupt you, because my experience, so I've interviewed hundreds, if not thousands of people, but I've guaranteed hired several thousand people. Like, I've hired a lot. And the ones who are not coachable, who are not willing to learn and grow and accept feedback, last weeks or months with me. They're not long-term employees. The one who is the most awkward with a customer, the one who's never held a mop in their life, because I can tell the second they try to, I tell them to go mop the floor, they try to mop with one hand, or try to use cold water and
that was
hot
me.
Water.
I remember the first time I tried to mop in a
And so the point of the strength and weakness question is to try to get an estimation on their coachability. If I can coach somebody, I can bring somebody from no knowledge to general manager knowledge. If I can't coach somebody, then they're going to push back. They have historically pushed back against me every single step of the way, because if they don't think they have a weakness up front, when I tell them, hey, you're weak on this area, they're not going to dismiss it. They're going to come back at me with an opposite viewpoint. They're going to come back at me with, no, I'm right. This customer was wrong. And
was the situation.
People who can grow are who we look for as managers.
Well, and it's transitioning back to the political topic on all this. In those situations where you have somebody that's incapable of growing, but is determined to keep their own viewpoint and say that they are not wrong.
Right. You don't get to interview them in a not work setting.
Or you don't get to see them on a day-to-day consistent basis. You don't get to see what they are. You only it almost feels that that's the danger of this social media projection of media, where people are able to jump into a conversation and immediately jump right back out. Like, these are the things that are happening on a day-to-day basis, and yet people can just, as soon as they have an opinion, it's almost like, I want an interview right now, and I'm not going to follow up with you until it's convenient for my own sake. So those people that don't have the ability to grow and don't have the ability to admit, hey, you know what, I actually might be wrong on these, they don't have that person to go ahead and say, oh, dang, this is my standard. This is the person that I want to be behind. Like, I don't see that. I don't, on either side. Honestly, I don't see any leadership.
Again, we don't get to interview, again, see, in my examples that, you know, we talked about with, I mean, my experience as a higher level manager, it doesn't really apply to real life in the sense that I am already at a higher level as an area manager. Versus in your personal life, there isn't a hierarchy. In a business, there's hierarchy all over the place, you know? There's a cashier, then there's a sales rep, or maybe the sales rep is the cashier. Then there's the shift leader or the assistant managers and general managers and area coach and operational manager, then HR, then whatever.
See, that's like a hierarchy that's established by an external force.
The external force is the business, though, because right. if you apply and you get hired, you're accepting that. But in a social setting, you're not the kind of people that are just having these conversations with other just random people, just anywhere. Hold on, this dog's drinking from the thing again, from the water dispenser again. It's very distracting.
Oh, is he thirsty? He's thirsty.
Yeah, give the dog a drink.
That makes sense.
Yeah. He's trying to drink. It makes sense. He's thirsty.
I'm watching him look for water, look for sustenance, and I'm not giving it to him. I'm sorry, buddy.
All right, so the dog will now live.
Yes.
And back to the point. The point is, if you're in a social interaction, you don't get to decide who's higher than the other one. So you take people as equal. You take people as it's me versus you. Versus if you're in a business, you assume the person interviewing you has experience and knowledge that you don't have, right?
Yeah.
That's the difference. And so the mask is different in each setting. And I think what our jobs are as humans is to try to not wear the mask as much as you can, is to try to remove the mask and just say what you think. When it's appropriate, because I don't think it's useful to have conversations with strangers in the street, but I do think it's useful to have conversations with people who oppose you. I think those two things at the same time, and they're different things.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody who opposes you, who like schedules a conversation, by default, is agreeing to have to participate in the process through which change happens.
I would rather have a scheduled debate, because then I know that my opponent has enough time.
And the wording matters, you know, when you call them an opponent versus when you call them the other side, that matters. Or like, and also this is why it's a problem that Black Lives Matter is leaderless. It's a problem because
it's very arbitrary.
If you do not have somebody I have to go back to my experience, right? To my restaurant experience. I have specific and vast experience running a restaurant from all areas of operation, from the customer service side to the food cost side to the ordering side to the cleanliness side to getting good inspection side to the P&L side to the maintenance side. Every single aspect of running a restaurant, I'm sufficient in, right?
Yeah.
But it's not somebody's job. Sorry. This is over a glass of whiskey. His face just made me laugh. Are you going to live?
I don't think so.
He's not going to survive the podcast, folks. So anyway, somebody's job is not to be that in a conversation, you know? I forgot the whole area I was going with that.
Me too.
Because of your reaction to taking a sip, but anyways. My whole point of this whole conversation is this. Masks, I think masks are not bad in certain contexts. I think masks are useful if you are with somebody who means you harm physically or mentally or spiritually or whatever you believe. And I think in that case, the most useful thing to do is wear your mask and get out of the situation. I think masks have their place. I think that whether or not you're clear on your belief, that can still be defined as a mask you're going to wear. But it to take the mask analogy to its extreme, it's just a more decorated, thicker, high quality mask.
Taking Jordan Peterson's point of view on the steps of progression in regards to working on yourself and your family and then your community.
Right.
I mean, if your political views,
and that's not Jordan Peterson's per se. He articulates that a lot. I've heard from Ben Shapiro. I've heard from a lot of people, but like that's just their way of defining smaller circles, because they say you're your family, and then you're your community.
Right.
You know, you're you, then you're your family, then you're who you interact with, then you're part of who you are, goes to the bum on the street you gave a dollar to and had a two-sentence interaction with. That's kind of you. But then, you know what I mean? You get defined loosely.
But then, like, in those steps, I would say, you know, obviously working on yourself and figure out what your stance is. But, you know, in my case, my views differed greatly from my own family's views.
Yeah.
And so
do you think part of that was your rebellious self? You just want to go against the opposition growing up?
You know, I definitely wanted to know what else was out there, because I grew up in a Democratic household. I grew up in that, where I thought the Republican side was the enemy and that they didn't have our best intentions.
You know what's funny? I did too. And it's interesting that you just accept that as good. It's funny because a lot of my favorite intellectuals happen to be Republican, you know?
Yeah, same here. I have to admit that. But, you know, what was I talking about?
So the whiskey's hitting us, folks. But yeah. The point is, going back to what I was saying, that caused you.
Oh, got it. I'm back.
This is what happens when you lose your train of thought.
Yeah.
50 really minutes into a conversation that's been paused like
you guys
times.
Are lucky I lasted this long. So, on that end, if, you know, given the fact that my views differ from my family's views, if I'm not able to meet a common ground with them, the people that I know best, it's presumptuous for me to go out into the community to millions of strangers and expect me to meet a middle ground. And it almost seems...
Why? If you don't meet a middle ground with your family, why would you think the world is not going to act like your family?
Mostly because I don't think that you have the benefit of them knowing you, of them giving you the benefit of the doubt, of saying like, okay, your intentions are in the right place. Because that's exactly what I mean, is that when I see these posts on social media of these people attacking one another for their own viewpoints, it almost feels like a mask, because at one point this person is a nice person. This person is the average person.
See, and that's, let me stop you right there. I'm going to change the whole conversation, because somebody's not necessarily defined by one aspect of their life.
Yeah, that's fair.
Or by one viewpoint they hold.
Right.
Because what...
Once you take a stance, don't you go ahead and put that as the thing you advertise the most?
Yeah.
Like, isn't it...
It's the competence loop. Back in action. Because loops are everywhere. We've been stuck in them on some kind of drugs. Who knows? Back in whatever day. But the point is, you get good at something by starting with low competence, then as you get good at it, you get confident, and then it's a loop, because as a 17-year-old employee learning to be a shift manager, being able to run a restaurant for an entire 6 hours by myself. It's like my competence was very low. My confidence was a little bit higher than that, slightly, to the point where it didn't stop me from acting. I think that's the point too. But anyways, so as I learned the scope of my job, then my competence followed, right? And then I circled back around when I, every single time I've gotten a promotion, it circles back around.
I don't think people are aware of that though.
But that's the point of conversations like this. It's like, if you don't start off good at something, anything. Again, I circled around and then I tried to go for another promotion and I realized from a shift leader to an assistant manager, I'm back at the low end of the competence loop. Competence loop. And then it's like, I got good at that. Then it's like, oh shit, there's a GM job. And then it's like, oh shit, I gotta get competent at that and I don't have any competence at that, right? And then it's like, I do that and I bring that to high confidence. Then it's like, oh shit, I'm not really a good GM because I'm not doing these metrics. Then I go back to the bottom of the same confidence competence loop of like, oh shit, like I need to do this to be a really good GM, right? And I think you change your own confidence competence loop. It's like, what are you trying to get good at? And which, that goes back to the growth mindset.
You know,
if you're not trying to grow, you're worse than somebody that's not trying to grow. We've agreed on that.
Right. And then, if you're not trying to grow, you're worse than somebody
who doesn't accept that there's areas of their life that they can grow. And then,
well, I mean, they're equal.
Wait, what?
They're equal.
What do you mean?
If you're not trying to grow, you're equal with the person that doesn't accept whether or not there's areas in their life which they can grow.
And the difference between that person and the next person is really small, to be honest, right?
Well,
it's like once you're trying to gain a skill.
It reminds me of the Heroic book.
You know?
Because it makes me think at some point in your journey, you met a person who had already achieved that which you realized you had.
And let me stop you because keep going, but No, let me interrupt you. Sorry. Interrupt you and say that at every point in my journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And that
there was a shift leader that trained me.
Right.
There was an assistant manager that trained me. There was a GM that trained me. There was another GM that trained me. Then there was like three area coaches that trained me. Then there was one that got promoted to be the vice president. Then I went back to an area coach. Then there was three more area coaches.
And at each of those stages, there was a choice whether you realize it or not. I can either back down and say that this person has achieved something that I never can achieve. Right. Or you can say, I haven't achieved that yet, but you can be damn sure that I will eventually. And you know,
I did that at one point. I dehumanized the people above me at one point, and I think you probably had the biggest impact on changing that and dehumanizing me. When I promoted a book and I would be on top of a pedestal, you'd say, no, fuck you, you ain't shit, fuck, like, what the fuck? And I'd be like, fuck you, I am some kind of big wig. And I promise you, so far, that's the lesson that I would talk about on your deathbed. That, sorry, guy.
We're getting cheesy, guys.
Although I'll probably die ahead of you. Anyways, the point is.
Oh, I don't know, man. You seem pretty safe nowadays.
Actually, no.
I feel like you're pretty safe.
The point is.
High blood pressure is going to get one of us.
You think it's going to get one of us?
One of us. High cholesterol. Clogged up arteries.
I guess we'll see. Because
aneurysm in the
depends
brain.
On the genes, and
lifestyle has a big change, big part in it.
So let me loop it around, because okay. So we opened with this about the masks people wear,
mm-hmm.
And in the current political environment, I think it's fair to say that we both agree masks are all over the fucking place.
Yeah.
Like, who knows what somebody really believes. We've also defined the mask as because we determine somebody's that, inactive that belief.
The belief, the true belief, is that which somebody repeats on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
Not what they project
on social media. That's what I'm saying. So then deeper is somebody's enacted belief, but then deeper than that, a little bit, is somebody's enacted belief that they really believe versus they feel they should believe. So already right there, we're at a fork in the road where people will or can't or have not been had access to, I don't know what it is, but there's a fork in the road between people who can accept that or cannot accept that. And then, so then the mask goes deeper. So it's like the deeper you go, there's masks at every level. And you're just trying to take off masks and be more authentic. And I think the most self-actualized person, the best way to be, might be an enacted belief that I don't really know a lot of things about a lot of things, but I would like to get good at a lot of things for a lot of reasons, and the pursuit of improvement as defined by an individual should be the goal.
Yeah.
But the pursuit of justice on the behalf of a collective is what people are choosing to dedicate their news feed to, right?
Yeah.
And their actions to. So I think that needs to change. And I think that, how does change happen? I think it's through conversation with people. I don't even want to say of like mind, because the conversation is going to have disagreements.
Has to.
But I want to say, I think the best mechanism we have is good-natured conversation with, I think you have to start with the people who are willing to change first, who are allowed. Yeah, that's,
when you told me that.
And then it might ripple into the community. Of radical,
because if
you're destroying stuff.
If you walk into a conversation already confident that you will not change your mind, it was eye-opening when you said that it was, there's no, really no sense in the conversation.
Right. So, we started with, what do you think the masks are? And we ended with more questions and more conversations.
Of course.
Thank you for joining the Heroic Podcast. The whole point of the podcast is that I believe you are the most influential person in your own life, and that you are the one most able to fix your life.
Call us out on our shit.
And I want to put it out to the public. Conversations like this. I really think conversations like this are the best thing we can do to contribute. And I'll have conversations with others in the future with different mindsets and different viewpoints. But I gotta say, I appreciate your viewpoint. You guys should know Danny will be on the podcast more than anybody else.
Regularly.
Well, this is what you guys need in your life. You need somebody who will oppose you constructively. And what we hope to show is that we do oppose each other, and we hope to show a constructive way to have a conversation to reach some kind of point, call it an endpoint or a point to another conversation or whatever, right? Well, we just want to bring you guys along. If you're not having those conversations currently, do you have anything to add?
Get to talking, people.
All right, well, stay tuned, because apparently I have to interview Danny's wife. I hope to interview Chris.
Oh, that would be great.
Who is somebody who radically agrees with Danny on a lot of viewpoints.
Oh, actually disagrees.
Did I say agrees?
Yeah, he's on the other end.
Well, that's the end of this
spectrum.
That was the end of the glass of whiskey conversation. And maybe, listen to Clank. Maybe it might be a thing. The glass of whiskey conversations versus the me giving my viewpoints conversations. And I hope to have helped you guys think through stuff, because belief enacted really is what you can do. And when you believe things that are good for the most number of people around you, you're going to act in the best way that's good for the most number of people around you. And through having conversations that you can't have with somebody you're not comfortable with, or even if you're not comfortable with them, with somebody who's not also willing to engage in the process of conversation that leads somewhere that you both don't know where it is, but hopefully it's constructive criticism or constructive, it's a constructive project. It's like, if you can't have that, join us for these kinds of conversations, and we'll hope to have them, and we'll see where this goes. Thank you guys for liking, subscribing, follow this podcast for the next conversations, and we'll see you next time.